Welcome to The Gauge, a podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets. Your host today is Sean Kiernan, CEO of Green Gauge, who chats to Ali Walker, Chief Creative Officer at distinct luxury and heritage brand Asprey. They discuss why Asprey decided to get involved in non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, how Asprey's partnership with Bugatti came about, how Ali sees Web3 evolving as it relates to luxury brands, and whether Asprey has any plans to delve into the metaverse.
Ali, it's an honor to have you here today. Asprey is one of the premier brands in the UK, and it's now entered into the NFT space with Asprey Studios. It would be great to hear your background and also some words for our audience about what Asprey is doing in this space.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for the invite. Asprey is a very old luxury brand. It's 242 years old. And in 2021, during the pandemic, we had the opportunity to really focus on how we could look at changing how we reach a younger audience, basically. And at that time, there was the surge in NFTs and Web3. So I kind of wrote a business plan around how Asprey could enter the Web3 NFT market. And that resulted in creating a new department called the Asprey Studio. So that was the first thing. And in that plan was basically to create a separate department that took the kind of DNA and the principles of the brand and tailored it to a younger audience and how Web3 kind of operates. So it's, for us, it's a long-term permanent plan. It's not like we're going to release something and then that's it. This is a long-term plan.
I was really excited when I was given a tour by one of your colleagues of the Bond Street office, where we could see the physical manufacture of jewelry actually in Mayfair. And what you're doing in the Web3 space is very different. It would be interesting, I think, to hear a bit more about maybe some of the brands you're working with and how you take the old traditions of a 242-year-old British icon and take them into the digital age.
Yeah, so the first thing was that I looked at was the workshop. So the workshop has incredibly master craftsmen. They are people that have learned their craft over many decades, and they are basically the DNA of the brand. So the workshop's divided into silversmiths, leathersmiths, and jewelry. And during the pandemic, we actually built a new workshop in Hammersmith, which is much bigger than the old one. It's like four times the size, actually. And part of the plan of the studio was to upgrade the workshop so the stuff that my department does can actually be done in a more modern, more streamlined workflow using digital technologies. So one of the things that we wanted to look at was if you had a collection of things, how could you make each one different? So it's almost like a bespoke collection, if you see what I mean. And that's one of the things that in the NFT space that we're aiming at, that very high tier of small collections that are each one are unique. So I thought about who could, rather than Asprey going full blazing into the space, it would be good to partner with someone. And Bugatti is an amazing brand that shares very similar characteristics to Asprey in that it has its workshop. It's a small brand. It's got a small team. It's been around for a very long time. And I looked through the archives and I found that before Bugatti made cars, Asprey had some footprint in with some of the Bugatti family. And the Bugatti family are sculptors, furniture makers, and so on. So there was a bit of an overlap even before they made cars with that. So basically, I put a plan together and a proposal together to Bugatti. And the rest is history. And we launched a small collection. At the time, everyone in the NFT space was dropping 10,000, 5,000 NFTs. We released 261. So absolutely micro in terms of drop numbers. And then with that, we made an NFT, the artwork, with the physical sculpture that's redeemable. So we were one of the first to do that. And then the whole sculpture is made in the Asprey workshop. We designed and created it using this new digital workflow. We have zero waste. So where traditionally the workshop would be making things by hand, and if that didn't work out, it would either be upcycled or be discarded. With this studio, there's zero waste. So we can work out how things are going to be made and put together before and remove all those errors. And it's the first collection where Yeah, there's 261 sculptures and each one's different. So that was a massive challenge because that's like 261 bespoke items. So that sold out instantly. We had 120,000 people apply for them. And then what we had to do was go, right, we've got 120,000 people, fine. How do we get that down to 261? And the first logical thing was, well, do they have the money? And with Web3, you can check and not fully check, but you get a gauge for if their digital wallet has enough funds. And out of that, 20,000 people did. So then we had 20,000 people and we had to go to 261. So we actually put up a method where we asked them what their interests were, why they were looking at this project. Because one of the things we wanted to keep away from was people that are financially speculating this. So we ended up with some good holders and sold out instantly. And then this is a long-term partnership with Bugatti. So we've got another release coming. And then from that, later in the year, we launched the Aspire Studio Club, which is members that we wanted, part of our brand, in a small members group. And that's 241 members, which is the age of the brand.
Well, 242 now.
242 now. I was thinking, should we just release one more? I think one more year.
And the idea of mixing a sculpture with a digital ownership is innovative. I know that Damien Hirst has looked at doing something with his artwork. Yeah. Can you talk through the thought process for how that works also from an intellectual property or ownership perspective?
Yeah, so with the first release, the IP was more on the Bugatti side and the artwork. So actually, the first thing we worked out was with Bugatti was the IP, who owns what. And we just decided, look, let's just share it between Aspire and Bugatti because we don't know what's going to come up. And both brands create the release, if you see what I mean. So we both agreed on that. So with the first drop, the sculpture is actually one of their cars, a one-off car that they created. And then the artwork, I like screen printing, and it's something that I've always messed about with. And it's a very simple 2-3 colors process. And a lot of crypto art is almost, you could almost screen print so much of it. So they actually are screen prints, but digital versions, and each of the pieces is different. So the IP, obviously we own the IP, but it's in the same way if you buy an artist piece, you don't own the IP of the artist. That's how that works. And we are now creating products that are completely 100% unique from ground up.
It's excellent to hear that there's a community you're shaping, if you will, in this new space. Aspire has relationships for decades, if not generations, with quite a few very important families and institutions. How much of an overlap do you see between this new community? Are you looking to build something that's complementary or something different?
That is different. It's different almost in quite a lot of ways. So when we released the club membership, that was a good insight as to who they are as well. Because part of Web3 is anonymity. You don't know who they are. But with the club, we do know who they are because we talk to them every day on Discord. And it's a very active Discord. There we have people who are from the age of 18 up to 50. They range from a kid who's a massive computer gamer through to people that own hedge funds and companies. Some big wealth, actually, we have. And at the top tier, we also have some very influential crypto owners there. So it's a massive mixed range of people. But the one thing that they all like is collecting. They're not kind of fashion people. They just collect things. If it's watches, cars, homeware, whatever, they just collect stuff. So they have all of them have that same hobby. It appears they're not that interested in fashion. They have obviously high disposable income and they like socializing, but they are different to the traditional Aspire client, where the traditional Aspire client is probably not interested so much in the social side. They just go to the shop or they order the product and the customer service is there. And then they'll disappear and then pop up when they need to. The club is much more of a living everyday community of these people.
And does that take shape primarily virtually? In a digital first engagement, you mentioned Discord, or do you also have in-person events?
Yeah, so with the Aspire Studio, we've got the actual design studio in the Hammersmith Workshop, and then we have the club, and then we have the gallery. So we've just built the gallery, which I think you might have walked around with a big A in it. That is there to actually showcase the collections in real life, but also for the Asprey traditional clients and the general public to get an idea of how this all works and to see things too. So yeah, we're going to onboard it that way as well.
If I may ask, obviously Bugatti is a fantastic collaboration and it's been a great success. Are there other brands you're looking at partnering with?
There's another one and that's it. For the Asprey issue, there's only two brands.
Fantastic.
And that's it, yeah. And there's a big one actually as well. And with the gallery, we're also collaborating with some artists. So everything in the gallery is born in the gallery, is exclusive to the gallery. And what we wanted to do is, even with the artists, there's an element of Asprey in there. So if it's incorporating a bit of silver, or if it's a bit of the design aesthetic, so they're not artworks or pieces that you can see anywhere else.
In terms of the natively digital space, then, we hear a lot about Web3 and the idea of people owning luxury items in Web3 world. How do you see that evolving?
It's a generation thing. So I think the gamer, the young people, 18 to maybe 21-year-olds, they understand the digital wealth a lot more than anyone else. So it's born mainly out of gaming, and it's more born mainly out of that side, which is the reason why things like Discord exist. That's for games. So the gaming industry has built that community and has built that worth. Some people spend thousands of pounds on games. And so even before NFTs and Web3 came about, digital assets were already there. They just existed in the gaming world. It's kind of the same. The one thing with digital, it doesn't degrade. So that's one of the elements that's taken away from having a digital asset that can be worth money, right? Because you need degradation, and they don't. So the only way you can make a digital asset worth a lot more, having it so it's a one-off asset or in a tiny collection that's linked to the blockchain, because then the blockchain can say that there's only one or 10 that exist. If you look at comic books or art pieces or anything where there's a collection and people over like 20 years have discarded them, so then there's only 5 left, those 5 are worth a lot of money, right? But with obviously digital assets, that doesn't happen. But the blockchain does that.
And there's a certain passion that people have for limited things that are fine. But the metaverse is another topic I have to ask you about. Do you see this as being led by gaming? Do you see this as being led by something else?
I think the metaverse is just a rebrand of what already is here. And in a way, a game is a metaverse, right? The whole point of a metaverse, from what I kind of initially understood, is that there is a generic ecosystem of worlds that coexist so that you could be in one metaverse and enter another one without downloading a new world or kind of going into a completely new thing. So at the moment, there's no metaverse because there isn't a universe that's been built to enable people to go in and out of each one. They seem to be siloed. And I think they are pretty much built on engines that have been around for years, really. That just never took off. And they're boring. At the moment, they're just so boring. I just don't understand them. I mean, I've tried to try and like them. And I've tried to see what other people's opinions are. The biggest issue, I think, is that the young people aren't in there. The people that are playing these computer games and spending loads of money are not in metaverses. The people that are in them are some people in the NFT space. But they're kind of, I think, speculating on it. And then startup companies who are trying to become ownerships of those spaces. But for Asprey, it's not one that if you jump in early, you're going to get recognized for. It's something that we're going to watch people make mistakes, watch people make achievements in it, and then at one point build them.
It's interesting to see that the current corporate participation, the metaverse, is often more of the billboard variety, occasionally a bit staid. Whereas what you're doing is a lot of fun. Actually,
yeah.
You built a proper community where people are excited to discuss. When you think about, as you say, the silos of the different metaverses and potentially those breaking down over time, if we have a properly digitally constructed universe where people can port, you've created luxury items that are inherently digital. Do you think that they will be able to port? And here's a question around intellectual property, in a way, between one metaverse to the next or between these universes.
Yeah, I think once it's developed and once there is this kind of like second world, and it has to be a proper second world, I don't see the point in the metaverses that are complete copies of the real world. Like I've seen one where they've been put bollards in the roads, like horrible double glazing, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's like, what's that about? But I think that goes back to the question of the asset, the IP, right? Because that already exists in games. So you could argue that game engines, I mean, most of it's built on Unreal Engine anyway, which is a game engine. You could argue that the game industry is a metaverse anyway, and your rights would exist there. But I do think absolutely that there will be a point where IP in the metaverse for luxury brands and ownership of that, it could, and no, I don't think it could, will be valuable. But then you're going to be competing against artists who have started in this space, who already have a good following. They may not have a big, they may be completely in the real world, but they're huge in Web3 and NFT. Those people are the competitors, because they could create something that is considered the Asprey or the Bugatti of metaverse. I think if brands go, oh, I'm just going to stick my car or whatever straight in there and instantly expect value, I think they're wrong.
The role of the editor will remain.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to ask you a wildcard question about if you're engaging with English law for setting up the intellectual property for your NFTs.
Well, the thing is, the English law, we filed all these IP applications on that. But there's a Madrid Protocol, isn't there, on the copyrights and all this sort of stuff. But like, the whole industry is being pretty much led in the States. I know the Asian side is where it started, but everyone's following what the States are doing from regulatory purposes as well. And like Coca-Cola and all those brands filed there first, didn't they? You can't really see filings in the UK. Not on IP, but on Metaverse. So what do you think?
I think it's a call to action, actually. Mm. The Law Commission has done a lot in the space to say that we're open for business, and they see that it is quite a good business if contracts based on English law. But it's a challenge to hear if the US is at the forefront of people's minds when they're looking to file first.
Mm. It's very expensive.
Yes.
It's a big investment. And then it becomes a question of like the NFT connectors, that as well, right? Mm. Copyright stamp or IP stamp. It may be a much better way, I don't know. But then Hermes, that artist, did the copies of the handbags. I think that was before they filed for Metaverse or Web3 or Metaverse IP protection or copyright protection. But they still won it.
Yeah. We might also have to file for space protections too.
Yeah, that's the next thing, I think, isn't it?
The next frontier.
Yeah.
This has been a fascinating discussion. I just want to say a huge thank you for sharing your insights.
No problem.
Thank you, Ollie.
Thank you.